All right, we are here live at Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm, Ticket Stock 2025 at the Plano Center. I know that the first 250 people who arrived got their swag bag because they're here in attendance. So thank you guys for showing up early. And it's well worth your time because our first guest of Saturday afternoon is the three-time national championship winning coach. It is the Super Bowl winning coach, the last human to coach the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl, and our buddy, the great Barry Switzer.
Hey, all right. Good to be here, Corby.
What's up, man?
Well, drove down last night. You called me and asked me to be here, so I'm here. The last time I was here was 2017. I just found out. I remembered it someday a long time ago, but damn near 20 years ago.
Did you come in for the, what, OU Texas? Is that the last time you were here?
I wouldn't come down here for that damn game. You think I'm going to walk? I would not walk across that damn fairground to go to a ball game. You got 500,000 people outside the stadium, 100,000 inside the stadium. I don't want to take pictures, sign autographs. I wouldn't ever see the damn game. I really wouldn't. I've done it one time. I'll never do it again.
Yeah, it's definitely a beating.
Yeah, it is.
Did you, like once, I'm trying to think, because I know that I've met you down here a couple of times where you were watching the game somewhere around here, but once you quit or stopped at Oklahoma, how many games do you think you attended after that? Just one after you, since 89?
No, you're talking about OU Texas?
Yeah, yeah.
I come down here. I came down here 2 years ago. Little Joe Washington and I did. And hell, we go to a bar and watch it. You know, we don't go out to the fairground. We stay around the hotel and find a good bar and sit there and watch the game. You know.
Okay, so this guy on the end, this is Matt McLaren.
Hey, Matt.
How you doing?
I saw you a while ago. Good to see you, Matt. Yeah.
So Matt and Donovan do our 9-1
show. Donovan,
good
to see you, sir.
And Matt's dad played for you. Do you remember anybody with the last name McLaren that played on...
McLaren?
McLaren.
Tim McLaren. He was there. Fairbanks recruited him, and then
okay.
he was on your first year. He was a defensive lineman, number 90. Okay.
From Plano.
From Plano.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, I don't remember.
We didn't play much, so I'm not surprised.
Well as Matt told us the Selmans came along, and that kind of ended his career.
Yeah,
my dad said he saw the Selmans come on. He's like, I'll never play again.
Yeah, the Selmans had a pretty good run. Yeah, that's 73, 4, and 5. They went 54, 3, and 1, two national championships. Yeah. And three we lost, we should have won. We gave it away, and we helped them. We knew the only one team. We had to help the team that beat us because we were that good.
So we had Matt Brown on. Matt Brown was at the Davey O'Brien Awards last week.
Right.
And Mac was talking about, for those who don't know, Mac, you know, before he became head coach at North Carolina and I think Tulane as well, he has spent a year under Barry as offensive coordinator at Oklahoma in 1984.
Right.
So do you remember the process of hiring Mac? Who was the OC before Mac?
Galen Hall. Galen was with me for years. Galen went on I think he went to Florida. And he ended up being head coach at Florida. Did a good job. Coached him at Smith and had some good teams. But Galen was an outstanding coordinator for me. And he was with me for years from 1966 to 83. Then I hired Mac Brown. Was he at Appalachian State? Or
I think that's right. Yeah,
I think
State.
Mac was at Appalachian State. And I brought him in and... And he was my offensive coordinator in 84. And after he left, he went to Tulane as a head coach. And then I went to Air Force. Mac didn't want to run the triple option.
He was saying that to us.
Yeah, he didn't want to. And I wanted a coach who wanted to run triple option. And so you got an offensive coordinator that doesn't want it, so you can't make him do it. So let's go with what he wants to do. We were good. Mac protected the ball, and we were won about 9 games that year, and we got screwed out of the Texas game here. We intercepted the damn ball in the end zone. I guarantee you. Jack, who's that damn safety?
Keith Stansberry.
Stansberry intercepted the ball. It was a downpour and the rain, and they had fumbled about 3 plays but earlier, and Tony Casillas recovered it, and they didn't give it to us. And then we intercepted the ball in the end zone, and Then he slid 3 or 4 yards out of bounds. If it had replay, it'd been our ball 20-yard line. We'd taken a knee and won the game. But they ended up tying it with us. And
You guys, Mac was saying you guys played for the national championship that year, and that was the Washington year in the Orange Bowl.
Right. That's when they penalized our opponents coming on the damn field after a score. You know, the officials weren't informed that that's our mascots coming out there. But
Well, didn't they? You score? Did you score a touchdown, and then they disallowed it?
Disallowed it, and we had to come back and kick a field goal.
And that was basically the game.
Yeah, it was.
Because the Schooner came out on the field.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was crazy. Ridiculous. Yeah. Things like that happened. And they just weren't informed, you know.
So were you gonna part ways with Mac? After that season, were you going to be?
No, I always liked Mac. Mac was a great guy, and I really enjoyed my year with him. And we spent a lot of time together, and he lived on Barry Switzer Avenue. He told me he'd write people, and people would call him. He said, did he make you do that? Mac just happened to find a nice home on Barry Switzer Avenue.
So when I was a kid growing up in Oklahoma City back in the 70s,
right.
My favorite TV shows were Gilligan's Island, Adam 12, Oklahoma Football, and the Barry Switzer Show.
Yeah, you bet. And, my favorite, too.
Yeah, you did two. You did two a week.
Yeah.
Oklahoma Football was wildly entertaining. It was you and Robbie Robertson and Chris Lincoln, and it was...
What are you talking about?
I always heard it was a Sunday morning, and that's why you would get wound up looking at the plays.
Well, yeah, Sundays were a little different back then because... you know, that was an era you could have the media in your home and you could be in after the ball game and you have your alumni in there, your boosters and everybody, and they'd stay to 3 o'clock in the morning, drink every damn thing you got in your bar. But you never worried about it being in the paper. You never worried about it. Everybody knew it was confidential, and you can't do that today. But back then you could, and it was a different era. I ran into Tim Callishaw last night, and I ate at Bob's Steak and Chop House, and I always do, and Bob Sambo, and Tim was in there. So I went over to Tim. I said, Tim, I got you a good story. I said, you know, the SMU just hired the president of Texas, and to come in, and the guy's name, is it Hartzell?
Hartzell, yeah.
Yeah, what his dad did?
No.
His dad was a sports writer, sports editor of the Tulsa World after Bill Connors.
Really?
Now, think about that now. That's the rest of the story. It's like Paul Harvey. You build that guy up. He's a PhD and all this. But his dad was a sports guy. And he wrote for the Tulsa World and was there with Bill Connors years ago.
So for those who don't know, coaches' shows now, it's commonplace, whether it's radio, TV, or whatever. But you started your coaches' show, didn't you, on TV because it would pay you more? Because
I hear these people talking about reparations. Old football coaches ought to get reparations. I promise you. I get the job at Oklahoma, and I'm making $24,000 a year, a 3-year contract. We went 32-1-1, two national championships, and I got a $6,000 bonus.
Incredible. You'd be making $15 million a year this year.
But it'd be a hell of a lot more than I was making then, I know that. Yeah.
So you started the TV thing to kind of
To make my job a million-dollar job, I had to go do drive hours morning and evening, get a talent fee for that. I did about 5 TV shows, really live. I did, and they were really good. I enjoyed them, but the most important was the playback show for me. I did a Kerr McGee show, and that was a 30-minute show where I had the players on the set, and we interviewed them and showed their background, where they came from, their family, and all that. So more an in-depth look into the kids in the program. But my playback show was the most important because I wanted it all over Texas. I wanted in Dallas and Houston, West Texas, Panhandle. So it was the show I had to do because the mamas and daddies that couldn't make it to the ball games, I wanted to be able to see the kids play. And that was the most important one I did. And I'm going to tell you, no one knows this, and it's really, I laugh about one thing, but In 1982, I don't know whether people in this audience know it, but Penn Square Bank went under. And when it went under, it took down Seattle First and Continental Illinois. It was the bust in the oil business. And most of my sponsors were people related to the oil business in Oklahoma. And Lee Allen Smith was Mr. Gaylord's right-hand man. That Mr. Gaylord owned the radio, had the TV, had owned the newspaper and radio. So he had three of them. He had the government made him divest himself, you know, at the time. He had to keep two. And amazed me that I thought he'd get rid of the radio. But, hell, he kept the radio and got rid of the TV and kept the paper. You know? So I didn't have any sponsors. I couldn't, Lee Allen and I, we would call our old, the people sponsored us for years, and they said they couldn't do it, they couldn't do it, they couldn't. Well, we didn't have a sponsor, and I was worried about, hell, I'm not going to make any money this year. And I was sitting at my desk, and I told my secretary, Kay Day, I said, Kay, call Augie Bush and Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis, Missouri. And so she placed the call, and I could hear the conversation that Augie wasn't in, and ask her, can I leave a message? And she said, well, he's in Scottsdale, his home in Scottsdale right now, and I could ring you through if you want me to. And I said, well, damn right I do. So I had got on the phone and rang about two or three times, and this gentlemanly voice comes on, and he says, hello. And I said, I'd like to speak to Mr. Augie Bush. And he said, speaking. And I said, hey, Mr. Bush, I said, this is Coach Switzer at Oklahoma. And he said, hey, Coach, how you doing? I said, not worth a damn. That's why I'm calling you. And he said, you know, I you've heard about Penn Square, right? And he said, everybody's heard about Penn Square. It has affected the market and tremendously, and it's tragic for what's happened. The FDIC is coming in and took over all the banks in Oklahoma, and I said, well, because of it, I don't have any sponsors, and I know you think y'all are the king of beer, and we think we're the king of football. I think we need to do a merger. He started laughing. He said, you need to talk to the guy sitting out here with me named Michael Rorty. He's the number two guy at Anheuser-Busch. And you, why don't you get him on the phone? Well, I went through the same spill with Michael Rorty. Didn't know never met either one of them. It was a cold call, and they said, well, put your stuff together and come on to, and set a date 2 weeks from now with our secretary and come on to St. Louis, and we'll visit with you. Well, I did that. And on the way up there in the plane, we're sitting there. We got my performer and all this and my budget and everything sitting there in the plane. And Lee Allen Smith, my guy, WKY, Channel 4 in Oklahoma City, he says, if you asked your regents or president, you can do this. I said, well, hell no. I said, you know, I'd rather get ask for forgiveness than get a damn no. I'm going to go up here. I'm desperate. So we go up there and I sit down. We sit out in the lobby of this big, gigantic office. And there's a secretary here and a secretary there and a secretary there. And there's only three doors, and the double doors right here in the middle. Well, you know, that's Mr. Bush's office. And over here to the left, I didn't know who was there, but it was Chuck Fruit, who became president of International Coca-Cola in Atlanta a few years later. But he was number three guy at Anheuser-Busch. And Michael Rorty is the number two guy, and he's over here. Well, we sat there, and finally the door swings open, and out walks two gentlemen. Augie Bush, you recognize him. Everybody's seen his picture in the paper. Well, I seen him, and I knew that's Mr. Bush, and that must be Michael Rorty, because the guy in the middle, everybody in the world recognized, his Paul Newman. It was Paul Newman there. So
Paul Newman was
all,
there?
All 5'6" of him.
Wow.
He's there standing in the middle of them. We got up, and we introduced ourselves, and found out later that Paul Newman was there. He had that hole-in-the-wall gang up in Connecticut with terminally ill kids.
Yeah.
He wanted Anheuser-Busch to build him a chow hall, big, beautiful chow hall, which they did, and they had their plaque and symbol on the outside of it. But that's why he was there. Well, I'm there just to ask for my TV show. I went in and sat down with them. They said, you know, we've never done a coach's show. We do NFL, we do NBA, we do NASCAR. We do all the professional sports. We've never done an amateur or collegiate sport. I said, well, it can be a first time. And they said, well, we'll think about it and we'll get back with you. Well, 2 weeks later, we're thinking there's no way. But that night, we all went out to, who's the guy that played catcher that had the restaurant across from Busch Stadium at the, I can't think of the guy, but he.
A Cardinal?
Huh?
Was it a Cardinal catcher? Had to have been.
No, it's St. Louis. St. Louis. What the hell were they? Cardinals?
Yeah, the Cardinals.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but
Tim McCarver?
It was, the guy had the.
Ted Simmons?
Yeah, Shannon.
Was it? Oh, Mike Shannon.
Shannon.
We had the restaurant. Okay. Well, anyway, we all went over there for dinner with the guy, with Michael Rorty and Chuck Fruit, and Mr. Bush didn't go. We had a blast. Then they took us to a game at Busch Stadium, and we were in the Busch box, and we were having a blast. They took had photographers there, took pictures, and we're all drunk and just having a hell of a time. And there's pictures of us today. I've been told there's pictures of us still in that box, Busch, from that night, all of us being there. And I was told by Michael Rorty's son, Sean O'Rorty, he's always wondered why those pictures were in there until I told him why. And later on, years and years later, after his father passed. But I didn't expect that they'd do with my show. So I go back to Norman, Oklahoma. I'm sitting there 2 weeks later, still hadn't got a damn sponsor. I'm not going to make a damn nickel this year in football season, other than what the university is paying me. But all of a sudden, I get a call, and it's Michael Rorty. He says, we're going to do your show. He said, we're going to do your budget and plan. And I couldn't believe it. I called the island and said, they're going to do our show. You know, that was when they had the greatest commercials. I don't know if you remember the Budweiser commercials, the horses, Clydesdales, and the dogs and all that. God almighty, it was great. They had great commercials. I'm going to tell you, this is what winning does for you. I never had a letter. I never had a region. I never had a president. I went through a bunch of presidents back then. Usually a president goes through a bunch of football coaches, but I went through a bunch of presidents. And not one of them ever said, and never got a letter, no one said one damn thing about me having my appetizer, Budweiser. It blew me away. The rest of my career at Oklahoma, Anheuser-Busch did every show for me and did every only sponsor I had. And
Like Nick Saban during his run having to broker deals
right.
with sponsors, like flying all over the country trying to get a sponsor.
That's what it was like back then, and that's why you made the Jackie Sherrill when I talked about it. That was the only way we made any money, and he was in A&M then, Texas A&M, we made it $1 million job by doing that.
Well, it's funny.
I did a show. It was a great show that we play home games. I called it the fifth quarter. And after the ball game, this is back when we were really good in the 70s, and I had them come into my in the early 80s. But I had the players, and I tell which players I wanted to be come up my office, just take your shoulder pads off, come in there, and we're going to do live. It's right after the ball game. We do a live show, scene just in Oklahoma.
You know,
and it was a hell of a show because the game's over, and next thing you know, 15 minutes later, I got all the players that played in the game, ones the stars, had them in there, you know, talking to them and visiting with them in my office with camera set up in there. So that was creative to make some money on that one. But so I was doing anything to create a talent fee, but that's the way it was back then. That's why I say we need reparations.
So Craig and I, when we were kids, my parents, I think as a Christmas gift, they gave me, like in the early 80s, a subscription to a magazine. And it was, you know, we all got Sports Illustrated as kids, but this was to a magazine called Sooner Illustrated. And I was like, oh my God, this is dedicated solely to Oklahoma football. I could not believe that a magazine existed like that. And so every week I'm getting it, and I mean, I pour over every single word, as I'm sure you did too. And yeah. I mean, it was amazing that it even existed. Well, Craig and I are in there with Coach 15 minutes ago in the green room. You started that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You owned it.
Mm-hmm.
So
was it like Oprah's magazine? You were on the cover every week?
No. The first cover was Billy Sims on the cover, diving over, scoring against Texas that year and the year before. And And that was the first cover of Sooners Illustrated. And Sports Illustrated sued us, and they lost. You know, they can't have Illustrated as a yeah. you know, they can't dominate that word or have a trademark on a word like that. So anyway, we did that, and we did Huskers Illustrated. I called Tom. No one was doing this. Remember, there was no technology back in that time. There was no technology in the 70s. There really wasn't.
Yeah.
And no internet, no, you know, it was nothing. And so we were doing our own TV. What we'd do is we'd go get the Tulsa writers and Oklahoma City writers, the top writers, and have them write the magazine. They'd do feature stories because the hell, writers didn't make any damn money, and we were paying them extra. And so they loved doing it. And so we did Huskers Illustrated, we did Texas Illustrated, we did Hogs Illustrated, we did Trojans Illustrated. We did 13 magazines, 13 schools.
And you owned them all.
We owned them all. And
that's amazing.
So then I told you too. We started in 19 when I came here to the Cowboys in 94. I was sitting up there with the guy that started that magazine with me. We were sitting up there one night having a drink after a ball game, and he asked me about how come colleges don't have jumbotrons in their stadiums. I said, it's called Title IX. You spend $10 million on a men's sport, you got to spend $10 million on a women's sport, and they can't afford to do it. And he said, I thought so. Once you get me an appointment with DeLoss Dodds, he just become athletic director at the University of Texas. I knew DeLoss because he had been in the Big 8 Conference. He was an assistant commissioner, and he was a track athlete at Kansas State. So I called DeLoss, and I said, I got a guy you need to talk to. So he goes down there. Mike Henry goes down there, meets with DeLoss. He says to DeLoss, how come you don't have a jumbotron in your stadium? You can't afford it? Boy, that lit him up. He said, where are the University of Texas? We can afford any damn thing we want. Well, and he said, I know that. He says, it's Title IX. He says, why don't you let me buy it? And when I get my money back from advertising on it, we'll split it 50-50. He said, where do I sign? And Texas was the first to sign up. And on the way out of town, I told Mike, he called me, and he says, I just signed the DeLoss up to our deal. And I said, well, why don't you go by and see Wally Groth at Texas A&M on the way out? We signed Texas A&M second. We ended up doing Alabama. We did Tennessee. And, hell, we did 19 schools right away. And so what happens is that, you know, obviously you only have 7 or 8 games a year in your damn stadium. So that's not much revenue for advertising, you know, just the school board for 7 games. But I said, here's what we did. Neil Pilson is a guy who was the president of CBS Sports. Neil Pilson one day walked into his staff and he says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to start filming, shooting cars going in a circle for 2.5 miles. Every year. And he said, that'll never work. Well, that's NASCAR. So he started NASCAR and filming on television NASCAR. That's CBS Sports, and that's why CBS Sports still has Winston Cups and all that. And so it's a CBS product. And so Neil was president of them, so we talked with Neil, and next thing we know, we're taking down jumbotrons out at stadiums and putting them on the back of flatbed trailers, 18-wheelers, and putting them to the curves of every NASCAR race and advertising that. Now we're making money. And so it was, you know, a good plan. And Mike's a smart guy. And
he's a hustler over here.
There you go.
He's a hustler. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk Cowboys, Jerry, all that stuff with Coach Barry Switzer next.
Yes, the roundtables continue from Mullen and Mullen Injury Law Firm, Ticket Stock 2025. We got a big ticket roundtable up here with the legend himself, Barry Switzer, continues to visit with us. Coach, thanks again for being here. It's you, Jimmy, and Pete Carroll, right? The only three who've won a Super Bowl and a national championship.
That's what they say.
Well, it's funny how things are proven through the years. You used to say X's and O's. Everyone's got the same plays. They run the same 15 plays. It's about the players that you have. It's about the relationship you have with the players. And I think that's been proven over the years with name the coach who's won. He may have a really good plan, but it's the relationship with the players. And you were always so good at that, from the recruiting process to when they played for you. Who do you think's really good at that in today's game?
Well, you know, I've been out of the game for, I left in 88, so how long ago was that? Gee,
gosh. That's a long time.
Nearly 40 years. You know, I haven't been in, I don't even know, the coaches coaching were junior high school or grade school when I was coaching. Hell, they might have not been born. But, you know, it's all about, always about relationships, you know, with players. And I've always felt like in college, I was better suited for college because in recruiting, I thought I was a great recruiter. And I convinced mamas and dads, and when if they had a dad in the home, if that, their kid came with me, I would treat him like he's one of my own. And Keith Jackson said to me from Little Rock, Arkansas, great, great player. He's a first tight end picked in the draft and in the, back in the 80s, 86 or 7, played 10 or 12 years in pro football, all pro. He's the only rookie that made in the draft class he was in, he was the only one to make all pro that year as a rookie. And they did it with Philadelphia Eagles, caught 82 balls. He didn't catch 82 balls in his whole career at Oklahoma. He caught 82 balls I forgot who, Buddy Ryan. Ryan was head coach of the Eagles. And I was glad the Eagles won this year. Really was. Because Jalen Hurts played for us his senior year and won a conference championship. And he was a great kid. I really enjoyed getting to know him. And so I was pulling for him. His dad was a high school coach. So most of the times I recruited kids that their mothers and fathers were Army, now Killeen or whatever, Texas, Fort Hood. And guys that were police officers, military, or structured life, or had some type of discipline like that in their home, and have all been really good kids. We never had a problem with them. And
did you form good relationships when you got with the Cowboys? Were there players that you had relationships that still last you today?
You know what? I did things the same way I did when I was in college. I tried to do one-on-one with these guys. And, I remember my first year, my rookie year with the Cowboys. I was at practice one day and come out there and early in the year, and Charles Haley wasn't there. And I said, "Where the hell's Charles?" And they said, "We don't know." "You mean no one's checked on him? No one's called? Is home? Do you know where he lives? You know one's been over there?" I said, "No." I said, I told the secretary, I said, "Get me where he lives, his address, where, get it right to me." I left. I went to Charles Haley's home. I rang the damn doorbell, and the door opened, and I looked up, and he looked down, and he didn't say a word. And I said, "Oh, you invite me in?" And he said, "Yeah, come on in, coach." And I walk in, and I walk over, and I sit down across from a big chair, and he sits in. I was on his couch, and I was looking at him. He sits down in the chair, and not a word said. He just looks at me. I said, "Charles, what the hell?" I said, "You aren't going to say anything?" And he said, "No, I'm not surprised you're here." And I said, "Well, let me tell you something. If you don't show up at practice, my ass is going to be here every time you don't, and I'm going to be here and get your ass to come back because we can't win without you. We've got to have you in there, our defensive game plan, because you're the best pass rusher in the damn league, and you've got to be there to play. And let me find out, what is the reason you're not there? Give me the reason and excuse." He gives it to me, some silly damn reason. I said, "Isn't that ridiculous, Charles, you think about it?" He looks at me, and he says, "Yeah, you're right." I said, "Don't do this again, will you, please?" And he became a leader for me. Charles and I established a great relationship, and he became a leader for us on the football team. As long as he's taking his damn medicine, he was. He's by far. Charles always sends me stuff to sign. Right now we stay in touch. And when he went in the Ring of Honor, he asked me to come back and induct him in the Ring of Honor. And every time he'd call, I said, "You still taking your medicine?" And he's still taking the medicine. And the week I called him the week of the induction, I said, "Charles, you taking your medicine?" I called him every day. He finally said, "What the hell do you keep calling me?" I said, "Charles, I don't want 20 people showing up to introduce your ass." And I said, "I want to make sure I'm the one." I approached it that way. I just did it like I was in college, and I tried to have that type of relationship with him. And, you know, and Emmett thanked me one day. We were looking at film. This is early on, my first year there. That we're playing somebody, and the most important thing backs you got to do is protect your quarterback. You got to have backs that can block. And the most important thing offensively, protect your quarterback. That applies to the offensive line, applies to the receivers, and applies certainly to backs, fullbacks, tailbacks. And so Emmett was a great runner, north and south runner, and we ran in tackles. You know, he made 17,000 yards in the leagues, but I guarantee you, it wasn't but 1,000 yards ever made outside the tackles, the sweeps or anything. You know, he's coming at you. And he wasn't a sweep runner. We didn't have the damn toss play, one toss play in the damn playbook. He was a straight-ahead runner, and he ricochet romance. He'd run those dark holes, and he was a great runner. He never got hurt, and all you got is headgear and shoulder pads when you tackle him. And I stopped the film one day. The team, we always look on Wednesday, look at the game. And we were looking at the game. I said, stop it, run it back. I want everybody to watch Emmett Smith. And Willie blitzed. Emmett Smith hit the damn guy right under the chin. The boy, he flew back on his ass. And Emmett standing over him. You know, and Emmett was a great blocker. No one ever knew that. And I wanted the football team, I wanted everybody there to see, hey, Emmett, we all know he can run with the ball. He can block your ass, and he will. He knows his job. And Emmett, after that film was over with, he came up to him, me by himself, and he said, Coach, I really appreciate you doing that, showing people that I do my job, and I am a good blocker, but no one's ever pointed that out. I said, hell, I do. I recognize the importance of it and that you are a great blocker and pass rush. So things like that are important to kids, be recognized when you're, you know, you do a good job, and other people overlook it. But I wouldn't overlook it. I would bring it out and point it out to the players and the team and all. And
are you still, like, we have Daryl Johnston on every week, and you know, the Chiefs are about to win 3 Super Bowls in a row, and Daryl was adamant about not wanting that to happen because he wanted to preserve the 3 and 4 years that the Cowboys were the first ones to do it, which, you know, you were there in 95 for that. But he's, and all those guys are, still pissed off about that San Francisco game.
Well, I am too. That's one game. You know, we came with one game, winning 4 in a row.
Yeah.
You know, because we go to the NFC Championship, first, let me tell you, I know every damn play. But first play of the game, Ricky Jackson, Oskie's the damn ball, runs 20 yards for a touchdown. They kick off to us. You know what happens? We hit Michael on an 8 route, a post route, hits him 18 yards, catches the ball. Eric Polk sticks his hand through, knocks the ball out, hits the ground, rebounds up in the air. Merlin Hanks catches it on a dead run, runs 32 yards for a touchdown. We're down 14 to nothing. Hell, the defense ain't even been out there yet. And the offense has turned the ball over twice. I mean, ridiculous plays. And you wouldn't believe it happened. And then they kick off the ball to Kevin Williams, the third kickoff. He takes the ball and runs it up in front of us on our bench and fumbles at the 32-yard line. Steve Young comes out there, and they take a 7-play drive, and they put it in the end zone. We're down 21 to nothing the first 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's in shock. Everybody on TV is watching. It's in shock. I mean, it's just unbelievable that happened. And you know what happens? Oh, I remember calling the offensive line up before they go out there their fourth damn time, and in 5 minutes, and down 21 to nothing. I said, you know what's great about them down? I said, you know what's great about being down 21 to nothing the first 5 minutes again? You know what's great about this? You know what? You got 55 minutes to get back at this son of a bitch. And you know what? You know what is that? We did. We go 21 to nothing down, and we're 21-14 in the second quarter. We're back in, and we got momentum. We took 2 80-yard drives for touchdowns and held them now playing defense because we're not making mistakes, and we're shutting them down. And then we get the ball with 1:20 left, and this is where I make the mistake. And I know what the right thing to do is. We get the ball. There's 1:20 left on the clock. I tell Ernie Zampezi, our coordinator, I said, Ernie, run Emmett 3 times in a row. If we don't make a first down, we punt to so much, and there ain't going to be much time left on the clock. Oh, Coach, we just scored. We can go get a field goal. We got it going now. He talked me into letting him go for it. We throw three incomplete passes, punt the ball away. Jerry Rice catches a fingertip catch in the back of the end zone as the clock runs out, the last play of the half. I'd dog cuss myself all the way to locker room because I knew what the right thing to do, but I let someone else influence me not to do the right thing, and that was the right thing to do. Well, we'd gone in the hot locker room 21-14, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
Instead of going back up down
well,
two
and,
touchdowns.
And then, you know, it's still, you're in it in the fourth quarter, and the Deion play down the sideline where he grabs Michael's arm.
Yeah.
I mean, that was still, you were right there.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a chance, but we beat ourselves in for 5 minutes a game. Ridiculous. You know. If we won that one, anyone's going to beat San Diego. We already kicked their ass out. That was the Super Bowl we were playing there. And anyone's going to beat San Diego.
You didn't fear Stan Humphries?
So, huh?
You didn't fear Stan Humphries?
No, hell no. And then we won it the next year, and so we would have had four in a row.
Coach,
came within one of doing it.
They always talk about the winners – spend about 5 seconds thinking about the wins and the rest of their life thinking about the losses. And I think we just saw this.
Yeah. No, you do. And I did in collegiate, too. I should have won 5 national championships, and I think about the losses, and it's the ones that eat me up, and this kills me.
I had 78.
I had the best team. I had the best team in the country in 78. Without a doubt, we were number one all year long. We were undefeated. Had a great defense. Had a great offense. Billy Sims, Kenny King, Thomas Lott. I mean, we're going up and down the field against everybody.
Greg Roberts won the Outland.
Yeah, won the Outland. We won the Heisman. We won the Outland. We're leading the nation in rushing. We're just we're best team in the country, and because we had a great defense too. George Cumbie, nobody wanted him. No one wanted George Cumbie. He didn't got to get one offer in the Southwest Conference. And I had to beat Henderson County Junior College to get him come to me from Tyler, from a P.K. Gorman High School. And he's a 2-time All-American first-round draft choice.
Packer.
You know? Oh, it's definitely a Packer.
We fumbled 9 times, lost 6 that day at Lincoln, and we got beat 17-14. And
9 fumbles.
Number 5. Go check the record. We lost 9 fumbles. We took fumble time 9, lost 6 of them. But we overcame that because Billy Sims makes a great run to get the ball to the 3-yard line, about 25, 30-yard run. We're taking it in. We're going to win the ball game. And the ball is not Jim Pellin, a safety corner, knocks the damn ball out from behind and falls on the 3-yard line. They recover it. And the game's over for us. The clock's going to run out then. So, you know, and then we get to play them in the Orange Bowl. And you know what? We got them 31-10 in the fourth quarter because why? We didn't fumble one time and didn't lose that. We fumbled one time, did not lose that in the Orange Bowl.
So one of the all-time great moments in college football is when, because you guys would get phone calls from, like, the Orange Bowl committee or whatever, like, hey, you're going to play in the Orange Bowl and this is who you're going to play. So Tom Osborne in Nebraska, they had just won that game after the 9 fumble game or whatever. And then the phone call, and it's on TV, of Tom Osborne like going, well, yes, we accept the offer to play in the Orange Bowl. And then they go, and you're going to play Oklahoma. And Osborne looks up, just eyes like bugged out of his head.
Devaney, too.
Yeah, like, we have to play them again?
Yeah. Our crowd, it shows our kids just going to shoot. That's what they want. They went crazy over that. Nebraska didn't want to, but we did. But if we had won that game, that we're going to beat anybody we play in the Orange Bowl, and we're going to win that national championship. So, you know, but you got to do it when you're at the game. When you play that game, you got to win that game, and that's the key. And we didn't do it. And those are one. The point was, the losses are the ones that eat you up.
That's right.
It's not the wins. It's the losses. And that's the ones that wear me out. And you know, that day we played Texas, and Keith Stansberry intercepts the ball and slides out of the end zone. We should have won that game. And we did on the field, but the officials didn't give it to us. I did not know, and it's one of the most iconic pictures they say I've got at Oklahoma. I've got wearing a hat that says "Beat Texas," you know, during the ball game. And you know, I did not know I was wearing that hat because it started down for, and my trainers, my managers come over and start handing you gear, and you're into the game, and I just throw a hat on my head and put on my damn gear and the ring stuff. And here I am on national television, and I'm wearing beat Texas. Isn't that a damn cocky-ass coach or something like that? I had no idea that I was wearing that damn hat. Until I saw TV after the ball game, I'm, wow, what the hell am I doing wearing that hat?
Speaking of having no idea, Bear, I've always wondered, do you still have the gun that you forgot was in the damn bag?
I'm going to tell you something. That judge in Tarrant County called me 15 years later. He says, I told that usually ATF gets the gun and takes it apart and all that. Mm. He said he had to have it for trial, and he put it in a safe. He put it in an airtight bag, put it in a safe. He says, I got that. Let's go to lunch. I'm going to give it back to you. I got today. I got my gun back. I got that. They took away from me at the airport. And you know why that gun was in the bag? Hell, it's a great story here. Jerry Jones didn't think it was a great story.
Don't tell that story.
But I come home, we're playing it's a preseason game, and I've got people, I built a house, and I was living in an apartment. Jerry's Cowboys were paying for the damn apartment. And hell, why would I want to build a house? You know what I mean? Hell, I got a nice place, a single. That was a tough boy, being single there in Dallas.
Yeah, I bet.
I had to fight him off. But anyway, I built a house because Jerry wanted me to. And said, show these guys you're going to stay here. When I came into the league, it was free agency. Just started free agency, and they started siphoning off players. So the Cowboys were being depleted of some players, okay? And the Herschel Walker trade is the one that really built the Cowboys, the nucleus of a great team. With those linemen, the Leon Letts and the world and all these guys, we were able to get in here and we were good players. That Jimmy and Jerry put together a great group of talent to win Super Bowls. And so I get my damn mind going 100 miles an hour here. I'm starting off.
Oh, the house. The
okay,
house.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The gun. So I built this house because Jerry wanted me to prove to the media I'm here for the long term. Well, I built this house. And Jerry's a great guy. He was great to me. He really was great to me. I loved him. I coached him at Arkansas. I was his coach at Arkansas. I was Jimmy Johnson's coach at Arkansas. Jimmy coached with me at Oklahoma for 4 years. You know, he won't ever mention that in the book or anybody. But he was with me. Here again I go.
The house.
Okay. I'm at the house. Well, Jerry, here, now I'll get off on a tangent here. I'm taking another road, detour. Jerry bought every piece of furniture in my home and said, send the bill to the Cowboys. I said, what? He said, I want you to send the bill to the Cowboys. I bought $400,000 worth of damn furniture. I had a girl, interior decorator named Lisa Luby. I just turned her loose. I'm telling you what. I had a beautiful, they had a magazine, Dallas Magazine, showed my home. You know, they did a feature on it. It's beautiful. But Jerry did that. He's that kind of guy. To me, he was. Because I allowed Jerry to be, people don't understand. Remember when we won the Super Bowl, and I told Jerry, I said, hey, Jerry, how you liking it now? We did it our way. You know, what I was talking about, Jerry and I understood that. I was talking to Jerry Jones because I allowed Jerry to be a part of a program he bought, a team that he bought. And before, he was persona non grata around coaches. And after being there about a month and a half, I had I told Jerry, go anywhere you want to, sit in the staff room, just keep your mouth shut, don't get involved in any offensive play, defense, just sit around and listen to coaches. If you bought the team, you deserve to be able to do that. So Jerry would do that. And Dave Campbell walks into my office about the second month I'm there. He says, you know, Jerry Jones is a good guy. He says, the only thing we ever knew about him was what Jimmy told us. And he was a good guy. Did I ever tell you about the day I signed the contract with Dallas?
No.
Well, this always sticks in my mind about Jerry. Is that we negotiated our deal, signed a contract, And the next morning after that, I'm in the office. Barbara Goodman's secretary had been for Tom and been for Jimmy, and now it's for me. And all of a sudden, Jerry walks in, closes the door, and walks over and sits down in the chair in front of the desk. I'm sitting in the desk. And he looks at me, and he's quiet, didn't say a word. He just stares at me. He says, "You know that contract you signed yesterday?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I want you to tear it up." He said, "Why would I do that?" And he says, "Because I'm going to give you a better one."
Wow.
I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." So we tore it up. He gave me a better contract. He got up and started walking toward the door. And I said, "Hey, Jerry, why are you doing this?" He turned around and looked at me, and he said, "You know what? I got up this morning and looked myself in the mirror. And it's the first time in a long time I liked myself." He's tired of putting up with the bullshit that he's having put up with. And everybody's telling me, "You ain't going to fire Jimmy Johnson. You ain't going to fire that. Jimmy's going to have freelance hell in your ass. Going to say anything he wants to about you." He sucked up his guts and did what he wanted to do, and he felt good about it because of how he was treated. You know what I mean? And I knew what anybody knows, that feeling that, hey, doing something good that helps yourself feel better about yourself. Hey, we've all been that way. I think we've all had maybe experiences like that. But Jerry did that, and I said, "You want to wait another, have another good night of sleep, and come back in here." No, he says, "That's all you're going to get."
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Barry Switzer.
Yeah.
That's what makes him great right there, storytelling that only he can.
I get the mic, and I don't get
it. Hey, stay up here, people. We don't care. Yeah. Stick around.
Hey, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. He's got to go. There goes Barry Switzer. More roundtables next. From Ticket Stop.
Oh, okay.